tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Welcome back. You are watching BLM Community, more than just a hashtag. I'm your host, Saka Smith, joined by a wonderful cast of amazing panelists. I got attorney Latoya Blakely, musician Mike Taylor.
What's up?
And Emmy winner and creator of Ghostwriters TV, Jackie Fern. What's up, guys? How are you guys doing?
I'm good.
So we got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about Trump's tweets this morning about the Black Lives Matter mural. We'll talk about Viola Davis's clip, which is old, but it's going viral right now. And we're going to talk about the McCloskeys and toting those guns in front of the protesters. So a lot to cover, but I do want to find out how you guys are dealing, coping, just checking in with each one of you. Latoya, let's start with you. How are you feeling? How's everything going?
You know, I'm taking it day by day. Some days are better than others. Mm-hmm. When quarantine started for me, mm-hmm. I was so happy just having the downtime and the break. But the longer it goes on, the harder it gets. but overall, I'm doing okay.
How about you, Mike?
I don't know, man. Just taking it one day at a time. I always tell people I've been holding it together with duct tape, but trying to find little pockets of joy to hold on to. It's pretty much been my thing.
Yeah, and Jackie, you?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm always so happy to be here having these dialogues with all of you. And to be honest, similar, I'm taking it day by day. I really thought for a second maybe we were on an upswing of this, but all we were was on an upswing of COVID-19. And I don't understand how so many things have become politicized, like the simple selfless act of wearing a mask in public. Yeah. And I feel like, especially having family members in healthcare as frontline workers, I'm so fearful for this next surge that we're already in. California is now like the hotspot. We're New York several months ago, right? Yeah. We just hit it. We're hitting it. And so I'm, go ahead.
No, it's just scary. It was a scary time in that regard.
Right. So I'm just kind of like, okay, well, I kept making a joke that when people say, so when are we going to hang out? I'm like, how's January 21st, 2021? And I'm like, oh, I think I might have manifested my new effing reality. So that's how I feel.
Yeah. Hopefully we're all leaving home and wearing a mask. And, you know, that's a tough part. We're dealing with, you know, having to remain safe, but also protest and make sure that we are taking a hold of this moment. Mm-hmm. One thing that we do know is that, as Jackie, you mentioned before you even got on, they've done the studies that this has not been promulgated by the protest. This is happening because of these parties that people are insulated in. We know that these protests are largely outdoors. I've seen people with the mask, giving out the hand sanitizers. So the precautions are working. So we just need to make sure that we're across the board trying to flatten this curve. But of course, let's get into it. Let's talk about Trump. You know, that's the thing. We have to stay energized because he's energized. So just this morning, he's popping off the tweets all the time. So Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York is going to do a Black Lives Matter mural, kind of following up with what they did in D.C. with Black Lives Matter Plaza. And so they're going to do that in front of Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue. And then, of course, Trump responded this morning with a pair of tweets. But the pair of tweets classified the Black Lives Matter mural as a symbol of hate, and he believes it will be denigrating the luxurious avenue. Just wanted to find out your guys' take of this in terms of symbol of hate. And, you know, forget about Trump for a moment, but there are going to be people that now identify with this, even some people that don't necessarily believe in what he believes in, but see and go, oh, it's a symbol of hate. How do we combat that? You know, how do we combat that going forward? Latoya, I'll start with you.
I mean, honestly, just hearing you say that is literally nauseating. Mm-hmm. I've said this before. I'm not convinced that Trump is a racist. I think he's an opportunist. I think that his fan base and his loyal base consist of a lot of racists. And I think that he's one of those people that prides himself on creating divide and just sounding alarms. Like, I think that he personally enjoys this, not because he truly cares either way about Black people, but because of the division and the conversation, he just gets off on it. I think that the idea of Black Lives Matter, like the fact that you would say that that is a hate symbol, is ludicrous. And my question is, well, what are those pictures of Black men hanging from trees? Like, is that not a hate symbol? Like, it just amazes me the things that people of color have gone through in this country. And if people think that, you know, we're overstepping our boundaries by calling for equality and justice, like, that is mind blowing to me, and it makes me angry, and it's just insane.
Yeah. Mike?
I second that. Like, I'm not really sure if he's a racist. I feel like he appeals to racists. He likes to gaslight and embolden racists. And we've seen this before, right? So we've seen it with programs like COINTELPRO with the FBI. Like, it's all about decrediting and dismantling Black progression in this country, and the fear of, to quote J. Edgar Hoover, the Black Messiah, right? Anybody who can lead the Black community forward. So there's always been this position with the government to kind of break up and dismantle any form of unity in that nature. So I feel like this is right in line with what's always have been. And it's not shocking one bit to me.
Yeah, it's for me, it's just so naked. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's a good part about it, because we can see it. They're not using different terms and terminology. Trump's kind of going straight after it. What do you think, Jackie?
I agree with what you're saying as well. I spent some time, the longest I could muster, watching about like 10 minutes of Fox News last night to see what they're talking about. And the way that they describe Black Lives Matter is really revealing that this is a news network, and they describe it as an attack on America and American values and wanting to, quote, destroy America. And I was like, wow, I cannot believe that this is what news organizations use in their verbiage and vernacular. And I realized, oh, it's appealing to the base. And especially when you have a president literally almost live tweeting your newscast, it's kind of interesting that I saw that last night. And you said he tweeted those words this morning, right? Yeah. Which is, they coincide, and similar sentiment to what you both have expressed is, he very much wants to galvanize this base, right? And he wants to continue to encourage them. Not only did he tweet that about Black Lives Matter and Bill de Blasio doing that outside of Trump Tower, but he's been accidentally retweeting that couple with the guns, that white couple screaming white power. Oh, the president didn't hear that. He's very intentional. He knows what he's doing. All of these are symbolic gestures towards that very intense white supremacist base who knows how to activate themselves. And that's the thing. We're all protesting, riled up on social media, but those people go to the polls, and that's what counts.
Yeah, we do have to focus so much on voting and making sure that we're keeping this momentum until then, until November, not just in California where we're liberal, but everywhere across the United States. I love seeing that we had 50 states engaged in this Black Lives Matter protesting. But of course, with protesting comes some risks. And so we have the McCloskeys, and we have this photo of the McCloskeys who in St. Louis decided to come out of their home to confront protesters with guns. Now, the protesters weren't protesting McCloskeys. They were going through that street to get to the mayor's home. So the mayor had previously released names and addresses of people that supported defunding the police. And so the protesters were going to the mayor's house to protest that release. The mayor has since apologized, it was unintentional. You know, that aside, the McCloskeys' actions here, and I actually start with you, LaToya, you know, bringing out these guns when they were seemingly not threatened. The McCloskeys say they were threatened. There's video evidence to show that if there was any threat, it was certainly debatable, but there seems to be no threat there. And we don't seem to see any protesters that were armed confronting the McCloskeys whatsoever. What's the legal liability for the McCloskeys, and do we kind of buy this explanation of theirs?
Well, I have to say, first off, when we learned that they were lawyers, and I'm also a lawyer, and I compare my home to their home, I was like, I'm doing something wrong.
Personal injury.
That was my first thought. And legally, I really don't know what the implications are. They are in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
Wherever they are. And I don't know what the laws are in Missouri. They were on their property. I mean, I guess at best we could, if there were verbal threats, then maybe it rises to the level of an assault or an aggravated assault because they were carrying a gun. I would be hard pressed to see any prosecutor or DA's office charge them with that because they were on their property. But clearly that was something that was unnecessary. The wife with her gun was laughable. And I just think that that's so interesting that people feel entitled to do things like that. So actually bringing charges would be a good idea because it teaches people what is and is not acceptable.
Yeah, and I did a little deep dive. They do have a law, Missouri does have a law regarding unlawful brandishing of a weapon. So if you do so in a way that's threatening to somebody else, then you can get charged with a felony, or it could be possible simple assault. And so they're looking into that now, and hopefully with public pressure, because I think there's a real chilling effect when you can brandish guns in your home regarding a protest that has nothing to do with you and that's not on your property. Mm. And of course, those protesters must have felt in fear. Mike, what did you feel about the situation, and how did you feel when you saw those images, those pictures?
Sometimes these times it makes it really hard not to be a cynic, but I just think it's hilarious how you see all these images of non-Black bodies aggressively brandishing weapons toward other people, and yet we situations like Tamir Rice happens where he had a toy gun playing in the park doing what kids do. And it's very triggering for me, because in society it just tells us that Black boys and Black people and Black bodies are to be feared and always assumed as if we are a threat. And there's so many instances recently, whether it's people storming Capitol buildings with guns to, complain about not being able to get their hair did. And, the McCloskeys, what are their names?
Yeah, McCloskeys, yeah.
McCloskeys, And, it's just every day, Like, I'm just so used to it at this point. It's hard for me not to just give an eye roll moment and just go, of course. I'm not wishing that these people would have been assaulted or any harmed in any way, but I just find it very interesting how we keep executing all these Black bodies with the idea that they're being threatening somehow, and we have all this evidence of white people just being very aggressive with weapons and being able to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, and I agree, and the McCloskeys did say that they are supporting the BLM movement and that the aggressors were the ones that they were afraid of were actually white, but that was obviously in the cleanup, sure, era of this. And of course, that hasn't really been reported on too much. What are your thoughts, Jackie?
Piggybacking off what Mike said, when I first saw those images, I only saw the memes of it. So that was really hilarious. And then, you read more into it and you're like, oh, what is that? How are you allowed to do that? What are the laws in that state? Are they similar to like stand your ground laws, right? So then any people, you can use that as your defense, right? I felt threatened. They were near my home, whatever. But I think that image is so powerful, because I wish more people would look at that image and ask themselves, if the roles were reversed and those were two Black people holding those guns, similar to like the Black Panthers, right? Mm-hmm. That sure. Iconic image of them with their assault rifles, what would have happened? Yeah. That would have been diffused immediately. Something would have happened if that was a Black couple holding those kind of weapons and a white rally was passing by. But yet, because it was the opposite, we're like, oh, that's kind of weird and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like this time is so illuminating for so many to be like, why do I have that bias where white men, Black men, as soon as they go from baby to prepubescent teen, are viewed as a threat. Yeah. Why is that instilled in my brain societally? And how do I fix that? Right? Yeah. So that's what the work is right now. And damn, it is so, again, that word illuminating, to notice with all these different people that you interact with, how backwards they are in their thought and how reluctant they are to do this work, to live in a truly equal world that requires self-awareness.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Even as a kid, that for me, that was, having to always portray myself in a way that was non-threatening. I always have to be aware of that,
code switching. code switching. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. LaToya, were you about to say something?
Yeah, I just want to jump in real quick on something Jackie said and Mike said. Jackie used the word weird to describe people's reactions to seeing the couple with the guns. And to me, it's not weird. It's very normal to see white people do things like that. And this may be a controversial statement, but like white people need to learn to mind their damn business. Like it's always them jumping out with a comment and a thought and why are you and why aren't you? And the fact that white people think it's okay to brandish weapons to that degree in public, whether it's in front of a Capitol building or in front of their home or in a restaurant, you know, like Texas passed open carry a couple years ago. And I remember being at a family restaurant with my niece, who was maybe 8 or 9 at the time, and in walks this man with a gun on his hip. And why? I think it's unnecessary. I think this country has established laws that have allowed people to do these things, but they're only okay when the right people do these things. And by right, it does mean white. And Mike brought up the comment about the fear of Black people, but I wonder if it's an actual authentic fear or if it's just an excuse. Because at the end of the day, I just don't think a Black person's worth it. Like, I wonder if that's actually the thought, is that like, you're not worth it. And like, fear is my excuse to do what I want to do to you.
And I think part of it is, you know, as we're dismantling this, when we talk about systemic, it's this idea of ownership, right? You know, we talk about slavery and Jim Crow and this idea of owning Black bodies and being able to tell a Black person what to do behaviorally. I think that comes down systemically, even to the Karens of the world, so that they feel empowered to then tell you what to do and, you know, that you're on their time. So sure. This is what we're dismantling.
And so, just really quickly to piggyback on what LaToya said, not only is it a Black life not worth it, there are no repercussions until recently. Yeah. Like that, it's like you better not only get fired if you're a police officer, you need to be charged and not with your degree. That's blatant first degree. So not only is it this instilled generational value placed on a Black life, but to live in a system that also allows you no repercussions. Yeah. I mean, what is that inheriting towards the next generation and the next, you know what I mean? So yeah.
We often hear about Black on Black crime as a retort. And whenever there is Black on Black crime, that other person is prosecuted, they go to jail. And usually when there is no crime, they're still prosecuted and they go to jail. So.
Well, I just want to say there's no such thing as Black on Black crime. People commit crimes around the people they're around, point blank and period.
True. So one of the issues I did want to get to is Viola Davis and how this inequality is across all lanes, from taking our lives to career, to the point where someone like Viola Davis, who you would think would have all the trappings that might insulate her from that, still there is no insulation from it. So she had, in 2018, she spoke at this women's conference, and she had this now video that's going viral again. It kind of went viral at the time, now it's going viral again. And she's addressing the inequality in the entertainment industry, that she is often compared to Meryl Streep and Sigourney Weaver, yet her job opportunities and the amount of her pay never seem to match. And so she says, we have to be given what we're worth. Sometimes they even acknowledge what you're worth, but they don't want to pay for it. As creatives, how do we start to have that conversation? As people who are not Viola Davis, how do we have that conversation? If she can't have it, if she can't get to that place, how do we begin that to kick off to get to that place? I'll start with you, Mike, on that one.
So this is very interesting for me because I'm a songwriter and I'm an artist, and I experiment with all genres of music. And with something that happens a lot in my life is, for the most part, I make pop music. It's grounded in soul. It's grounded because I'm from Philly, so they gotta have that Philly soul. And it's grounded in hip hop. But for the most part, I make pop music. However, Black people get pushed out of that category. And we need to understand these genres of music is directly attached to formats of radio and demographics. So each format has like pop being the whitest demographic and so forth and so on. So what happened is systemically we get pushed in certain categories, which are the Black categories, which allows us gives us less access, even though we're making similar music as people who would be considered pop artists who are usually non-Black. And Tyler, the creator, said something about this past Grammy, where he received the Grammy for, I don't know if it was best hip hop album, but whatever it was, he was really upset because what they did was they gave him a trophy in the black category when and wouldn't put him up against Billie Eilish or other albums that would be more fitting for the work he produced. So I say that to say it's really hard to kind of climb the ladder as an artist, as an independent artist, because we get forced systemically in categories that are like the black categories.
Mm-hmm. And LaToya, what are your thoughts on that? As an attorney trying to make those inroads in that field and then in the entertainment field, how do you begin to have that conversation?
I have lots of thoughts on this. Let me try to pull them together. As an attorney, I primarily practice in a very diverse Democratic county. And so since I've been there, I've seen lots of Black women and men elected to benches. So I think that personally on that level, there's a lot of opportunity and growth and diversity, right? That's in that county and that's in that one area. I've definitely experienced counties, other legal professionals, even clients who do not appreciate a Black attorney the way that we would hope to be appreciated in 2020. In terms of entertainment, I hate to admit it, but it's always in the back of my mind that regardless of my talent or the level I achieve, will I ever make the money that I'm due because of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that that is an unfair burden to have to carry. It's something that we shouldn't have to worry about. If I bring talent to the table, I should be paid, like Viola Davis said, what I'm worth in whatever capacity, legal, business, entertainment. And I hope that the momentum of today carries us into a new day where people are realizing what they are worth.
Yeah. Jackie, you?
Whew. You know, this topic is threefold. The first one is that people of color, Black, Indigenous, Asian, Latino, and trying to be in the entertainment industry, that we don't know our worth in general. Like, I feel like so much is generationally inherited where it's like we feel less than because that's just what we grew up with. And the overcoming, first of all, that mental mindset, right? Of like, oh, I deserve to be here. I'm worthy. I belong. And I demand the same pay. That's one. Two is knowing the pay. Oftentimes that is shrouded in secrecy until you are the top echelon of actors that it's reported on Hollywood Reporter how much you're making. But until then, you truly don't really know the rates. You're just happy to be there, right? So then thirdfold is the only way that this can change is with the emergence of BIPOC. I guess I'm now into saying that term versus POC now, but BIPOC leaders in entertainment, being the top executives, not the tokens in the room. Right? So people like LeBron James starting his production company, $100 million. I think a lot about that story that Octavia Butler told. No, Octavia from Madam. Yes, okay. That she told about Madam C.J. Walker. So she had already won an Oscar. She had a huge resume of all this amazing work she'd done, right? And LeBron James was like looking at the contract and said, you need more money. And he fought for her to get more money on a lead show after her already having achieved all this success, right? Oh. And then same actress, her telling that story about Jessica Chastain. Again, allyship, being like, oh, we're not getting paid. They don't know. We're not getting paid the same? Okay, well, I'm not signing on unless they pay us both equally.
Yeah.
She became the biggest ally, Jessica Chastain, right?
I didn't know that. That's beautiful.
Yes, and Octavia, she cries when she tells that story because, you know, she told her like how much she's getting paid and she went, oh no, that's so much different from what I'm getting paid. I won't sign on unless they take us both at the same equal pay. Yeah. Right. So those kind of different levels of allyship from communities of color, like what LeBron did, to then our white allies. You know, so much talk right now is like demonizing white people. They're the devil, whatever. That's not effing true, period. Right. There are so many, yes, wrong ones. Okay. Yes. But there are so many amazing allies who are doing the work and will speak up for us in these spaces that they are the majority in, and we need people like that.
Yeah, and we got to acknowledge that the movement's not demonizing white people. We demonize a structure that has created a system that's unjust, where people are at different levels of justice. But we need white people. We need the entire population to go, we want justice for everybody. Right. So it's one of those things that we have to really employ everyone. We don't want to alienate anyone because the message is getting out incorrectly. What do you guys think creatively? I know Mike, you just came out with Hot, Hot Summer.
Sure.
How are you able to balance with your emotions of taking in what's happening and then produce creatively?
Yeah.
How do you find that space?
Well, it took me a while to realize that a lot of what was happening was wearing down on my spirit. So I literally had to disconnect for a little bit just to recenter myself and find my joy. With that being said, a lot of my work, usually all my music is the, upliftment of Black stories and Black nuance and Black joy. And a lot of my music is very positive. A lot of my music has a lot of deep entrenched messaging in it. So for me, I think being an artist helps me kind of like process how I feel. My best means of communication. So a lot of my projects are already touching on these subjects.
Yeah. I was saying to you earlier, it's we hear these songs before and we hear these speeches before and they sound prophetic, but just we've been fighting the same fight for so long.
Right.
So it's just glad to have that creative spirit, because we need that fuel. We need that energy.
It's interesting because a lot of my older works have been coming back around and people think that it's new, like I'm jumping on the opportunity. And I'm like, No, these things have been around because none of these struggles, none of these stories, none of these narratives are new, right? So it's coming to light with the help of technology, and I'm glad people are finally here. Welcome.
Yeah. And Jackie, personally, I've known you for a little bit, and you've always been grounded in your voice and authentic, but you have taken, I would say, new life. You know, I don't know if it's the meme of TikTok, but you were doing TikTok, you know, when COVID started, but when the Black Lives Matter issue hit, you've really, I don't know, I've seen an energy that I didn't know was even there, because you were already so full of energy before. What's been behind that?
You know, it's so interesting. I think I've been navigating this. I used to be a news anchor for a long time, so I was very much censored. And then navigating this comedy world. But I have been, ever since I took ethnic studies in college, I've been someone who has protested, was fighting for the equality of all ethnic groups, right? I just looked at something on my Facebook that said, like, you did this 10 years ago. And it was like the iconic picture of the wrist the fist raised at the Olympics. And I'm like, oh, yes. I've always been like this. And I remember, I feel like for me, what happened with all of this, starting with George Floyd as the catalyst, was like, oh, I have a voice that resonates with the community, because I'm having these very intense conversations with my close family and friends about their anti-Black sentiment in the Asian community. And I often forget, to be honest, because literally all my friends are Black, all my best friends are Black, everyone who's given me a chance in journalism or entertainment has been Black, that I forget that there's so much of that in the community. And it's you're raised with that, right? So for me, what has happened has been like, okay, I'm either gonna stay silent or post memes, or like, what am I gonna do? And I'm like, let me sit down and write scripts on like how I can better reach people to mobilize them. Because right now, all we're doing is sitting down, a majority of us. We can't go outside, the ones who are nice. And there's time for them to listen now. So it's me taking this time, especially on TikTok. People, I love TikTok. I fucking love TikTok. And I feel like I've become an ethnic studies teacher, because I'm kind of like, and I feel like this was a catalyst moment in the sense of all of this anti-Asian racism was happening because of COVID-19. And I was like, of course, calling everything out. You cannot do this. It's problematic, blah, blah, blah. And then George Floyd happened. And I go, okay, all of you Asians that were so upset about this, you can't be upset about this and not get mad about Black Lives Matter.
He's still calling it Chinese virus. He's still doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you, thank you for noticing that, Chaka. I've 100% always been an advocate, especially in newsrooms, always fighting for stories about officer-involved murders at this point, being given more time on air. And, you know, producers don't like to do that, especially I remember that happened when I was in Cleveland and Tampa. So I said, let me write it, right? At like 2 a.m., I'm like, I'll write it. I'll make all the elements. This deserves more than 20 seconds. I was in Cleveland around the time of Tamir Rice, all that stuff. And I'm like, that's a murder. And they're like, you can't say that stuff. You can't even, I'm like, so I feel like now finally, cause I'm free of that profession. Yeah. I'm able to be like, oh, let me just go ham on this and help people who look like me mobilize towards the right side of history.
Yeah, definitely, definitely noticeable. And I appreciate your support on that. That's amazing. And LaToya, as an attorney, what is it that we can do on the ground to change what's happening? You know, Breonna Taylor, we're making the phone calls, we're doing the petitions. What more can we do to make sure some of these laws are actually changed?
Well, that's a really good question. And I wish I had the answer. But I would just say that continue the efforts that are already taking place. You can't let up. You have to hold our elected officials accountable. If they're not working in a way that benefits our communities, get rid of them. That's our right, but it goes back to voting. We all have to get out and vote. And I saw something, I think on Instagram, that said that there will be 4 million 17-year-olds who turn 18 by election, right? And I was like, I never even thought about that. Ooh. But like, if there was a way to like identify these people and to make sure we're talking to them about the right to vote and the need to vote and to get them out, I just think that we have to stay active. We have to stay on it. And everyone has to do what they can personally in their lives and with their everyday, you know, fights and opportunities and keep the others uplifted and motivated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that if we can continue what we've got going, I know for a fact we'll actually get to real change after November, if we can continue what we got going right now. So, you know, it's a short road, but it's also a long one. So hopefully we'll get there. I just want to thank all you guys for joining me today. This was
Thanks
a great conversation. You guys are like my therapy, so I really enjoy it. Jackie, where can they find you online?
They can find me at Jackie Fern on Instagram and TikTok. And really quickly, I said Octavia Butler because when I read Kindred in high school, that name has been burned into my brain because I thought that book was so good. It's Octavia Spencer. If you can, read Kindred by Octavia Butler. Also,
awesome. Mike, where can they find you online?
You can find me at I Am Mike Taylor on everything. IamMikeTaylor.com. Every Monday, I release new music on MikeMondays.com. And
Hot, hot summer out now. They can download
it. Hot summer is out now. It's about resistance, past, present, and future, and how we can keep the fire burning.
Nice. And LaToya, where can they find you?
I am on Instagram at LaToya.Blakely and Twitter at BlakelyLaToya.
And you guys can find me at Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. It's Chaka Strong, maybe TikTok too. See you guys next week.
Peace. Thank you.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.